the main reason I wanted to talk to you today was because you had a council meeting yesterday where the approvals, was it the approvals for the subcommittee chairs were all done, that sort of thing?
Yes. It's the approval, as mayor, I guess have the honour and obligation and to have the governance structure. And that's my job to kind of oversee that. And then under the governance structure is to propose chairs for the structure and deputy chairs and then other delegations which are both internal or external.
Yeah, and for people who don't know, the subcommittee chairs, that's where a lot of the decision-making kind of happens. And some of them are quite important stuff, really.
Well, most things end up coming through. Sometimes we delegate, we have to delegate things. But, for example, you would have an external one. An easy one would be the Joint Management Committee for Emergency Management. So then all councils would have a go into for the region for emergency management. And so we have a person delegated for that job. And they would take, you know, our council's view, not just their own personal view. That's not the point of the delegations. Council's view, and then they have to make decisions within the framework of that, those agendas. But then those agendas or the important things for our council will come back to our committees for our information as well. So the delegations in that sort of way, they are actually making decisions and voting on certain things at a certain time, but they're always under our own strategies and plans and where our council's going.
Okay.
So, but in terms of, I guess if you want to go bottom up, I guess I'd call them things like, say, a think tank or an innovative idea where something might come up. Let's say housing, which is really one of perhaps council's normal parts of business. We do the planning for the land, but we don't get into the housing. But if we feel that it's an important part to like at least look at and perhaps partner up with other people or support, you know, overall housing as an issue,
yeah,
then we could put a little working group together of councillors and or was in a dynamic, organic kind of way, like Raglan does, you know, and investigate the opportunities. And if there's any opportunities that come within our well-beings, then that would be then proposed from that working group and that work and sifted,
yeah,
and then brought into one of our operational committees. And we'd probably workshop that first with, hey, this is what we thought about, this is what we looked at, this is what we've discounted, this is where we're at, what are your thoughts? And from that workshop, then the whole of council are in those workshops, and then those whole of council would say, A, B, and C, that sounds great, let's bring that into the committee, because that's just a workshop working on it. And then the whole of council is in those main committees, whichever that subject falls under.
Yep.
And then that committee would then have a more formal, you know, there's a more formal agenda, and that's, you know, obviously a public's agendas where,
okay,
you know, where we go through, if it was a decision to be made or a work program to then be allocated back into the work stream for, or in line with, you know, existing plans or strategies or, you know, with community plans or
so you,
with, you know, the long-term plan.
You mentioned, was that a theoretical or a concrete thing that happened with a workshop or subcommittee on housing?
Well, it's on my list. It comes up a lot in housing, and I know, you know, our amazing councillor, you know, Lisa Thompson, you know, is already active in those spaces as well, and that comes up. It's come up a lot. So I guess I'm just giving an example of something that's been flagged and discussed in a general sense around people.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, part of my job, having met every councillor on a one-on-one basis and to see what their visions were and what they also lobbied for and to be elected, and then they were elected by their people, then it's important to understand where they're coming from. So things like housing would come up. But other things that we're looking at is like a rural forum. And I think I've had a brief chat to you about that, where over 50% of our district, we're still a rural district, we're growing really fast and our towns are growing, but over 50% of us is rural. So how do we have a, you know, I guess a rural forum where we can understand their rural needs and wants, and where we can, one, get out of the way as council, or two, lobby and support them, or three, hear those more of those voices around, you know, the new technologies, innovations, and where they can then lobby some of that and segue some of that stuff into, say, waste management or sustainability or climate change and et cetera.
Okay.
There's lots of different ideas, but these are more like, these are not part of the governance that happened yesterday. These are just some of the organic, well, okay, slightly organic, an opportunity for us to look at, within the framework of all the busy stuff we do, an opportunity of how some ideas come into council, and we want to be able to look at them and then, you know, see where they fit into the original visions and the long-term plan. At the end of the day, I guess my mandate was deliver the long-term plan on time and on budget, right? And so we want to make sure that, and also then we try and promise something, we want to try and deliver it.
Yeah.
And right in line with our community's aspirations. But not every aspiration can be met by us, and sometimes it's not necessary for us to be involved or just to be aware of it but not actually relate it.
Yeah.
So it's just like making sure that we've got our ducks in a row and we're doing our work and delivering what we're supposed to do, and then where we can support and or lobby, we do that with our communities.
So let's talk about what happened yesterday then. Committee chairs were appointed. We've got strategy and finance infrastructure committees like that. So who's in charge of those?
Sure. Yes, the one called strategy and finance, I've actually changed the name of it because I wanted to change slightly the direction of it. It's called performance and strategy.
Yep.
And the reason for that is the strategy and finance is really looking at, we have a regulatory, finances is really important because that's where the money comes in. The money comes out, $200 million of revenue comes in, and then we spend it on behalf of ratepayers. So that's really important regulatory information and financial care that we do. But really what I really wanted the business to look at, and I think of it as a business in that, how is that business performing, including how our finances are going.
Okay.
So, that's a different sort of slant than we've had in the past, because you can tick off a balance sheet or a profit and loss, but it doesn't necessarily tell the whole story about how a business's health or also the environment with which it is actually running.
Yep.
So, things like the wars and inflation, lots of things that we can't control, even our own country can't control, even our government can't control, whoever's in, really actually affect how we do things, the capability, So that's part of that business performance and understanding that and how those segue back into what we're doing. So that's a slight a change in direction, really I think it's actually fulfilling a bit more of what we should be looking at and understanding that more holistically in terms of business. So that's that one. Policy and regulatory is similar to what I had was before.
Hold on, Jackie, can we go back and just say who the chair is for the performance and strategy?
Yeah, so performance and strategy is councillor, that's Janet Gibb, she's the chair, and the deputy chair is Councillor Marlene Romata, who's one of the new councillors, and she's from Wairinga Whiti. I have to get it right, don't I?
Whitikahu, I think.
Whitikahu, that's
yes.
it.
Yes, yeah. Okay, and so then another committee is the infrastructure committee?
Yes.
Or
and
was.
Infrastructure's basically staying similar to what it was. I think we're taking emergency management out of it, so it's a people's area, and that's the chair for that is the same chair that we've had before. That's Councillor Eugene Patterson from Ngāra Wahia.
Yep.
And his deputy is another new one, which is Councillor David White from Huntly.
Okay. All right. I don't know all the committees off by heart, so you might have to
you're doing really well.
Help me out.
Yeah, so we've got the policy and regulatory, which is sometimes that's quite a small committee because it's things don't necessarily happen, but then you have some big things happen like animal control, so it kind of has fluctuations, and because of that it's small but it's also big sometimes.
Yeah.
So that's under and it stays the same. It's important to have bylaws and have hearings and have people's voices and submissions, and that's under the deputy mayor, Councillor Caro Eyre. She's on the Western District, so she's on your northern border. And the deputy is where's her deputy? Hang on, I'm just going to remember myself now. So many pieces of paper here.
I've been told the list of committees is actually quite large. Yeah. So
No. Well, there's four main committees that we've got. And where are you? It's written down. I'm going to blank on that one.
That's all right, we'll come back to it.
All councils are in all of committee in council, and then there's four main committees. We're last trying for the last 9 years, there's been three main all of council committees. So the only additional one, which is a new one, and that's the one which is actually headed up by Councillor Lisa Thompson.
Yep.
And then the deputy is the deputy mayor, Caro Eyre.
Yep.
And that one's called Wellbeing and Sustainability and Wellbeing.
Okay.
And the difference between that one, in terms of really how councils run in the past, is anything basically to do with people.
Yep.
So the blueprints are in there, the emergency management's in there, we've climate change, because in the past we've had a working group, let's call it that, around climate change and sustainability. But because it's so important, and I believe it's important for our future and also the robustness, not just now, but short, medium and long term, to give it more air and more, I guess, mana and focus, and to embed it into our culture like we do health and safety,
yeah,
then it was important to bring it into that people space that, so well-being. So climate change is in there, and sustainability as well.
Okay. And
so that's an opportunity for, you know, as there's also, remember we've got our own reform going on. It's like 161 pages or whatever it was coming from government on our reform. We've got another version of the reform coming through. So I believe in terms of actually coming, we're actually at Karapiro. So I'm sounding like I'm jumping, I am a bit. So on Friday last week, we were actually at Karapiro as had a Zone 2 meeting where all of the councils are invited within our zone to get together and have a little chat. And actually, it was really good because Deputy Mayor leaned over to me afterwards. She said that because we were talking about what we felt as a zone were important topics to be focusing on in terms of our government, our councils and our governance, and really this whole well-being and sustainability was actually exactly where that was heading. So we already made that decision about that committee and to highlight those important things, not just for now but for the future. So we were quite pleased that we felt like we were, with all the work that we've done with local government and with our senior leadership team and with our councillors and, you know, my structure, I had done a lot of under advisement, you know, engagement myself to make sure that we were on a direction that was robust and, you know, appropriate for both ratepayers, but the whole of us together working.
Yeah, yeah. So that's I think we've covered the, I hope we've covered the four big committees there.
Yes.
There are smaller committees that do things?
Yes. Well, like for example, there's a Hamilton Waikato, you know, group where, so obviously, you know, we're in the middle of, we're, you know, the beating heart of the Golden Triangle of New Zealand, right? So our borders are really important, our border partners are really important. So one of the, you know, one of those working groups is the Hamilton Waikato, so we can make sure that things happening on that border are effective for that growth and how we manage those things. I'm looking at looking up if we can setting up the same sort of thing in the north, which we don't have with the Franklin Board. Part of the Auckland City Council, as an example, and probably doing that out to our east.
Yeah.
We've had a solid waste steering group, and as well, we've got Future Proof, which is the Waikato region has a Future Proof overall strategy that try and take, and we try and link in our own plans and strategies into the whole region, Waikato region strategies.
Yeah.
So there's a chair on there, and that we work together as a whole region, obviously, because, you know, the more of us together working in the same spaces, the better for the whole Waikato.
Yeah.
There's other ones like the Hauraki Gulf. So we have only 200 metres of access along the Kaiawa coast to the Hauraki Gulf.
Yeah.
But that's really important, particularly for Waikato Tainui, because that's in that, you know, tribal access to the Gulf for fishing. And so it gives that 200 metres. So the Hauraki Gulf Forum, although we've only got a small part of the land of it, but for us, it's actually very important in terms of our tikanga for our district and also the region.
Jackie, can I ask you, you've only got, I think you've had four councillors returning, so not a lot of experience.
Five.
Oh, including
five.
You, yes. but in terms of appointing chairs to things, have you tried to just appoint people with experience? Like, that seems kind of important.
Sure. Well, there are two parts of that. Yes, we want to have people with the right experience. The three main areas for that is experience and capability, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's two main areas. Like how much time have they actually got and actually how much experience they've had in that. So I've been quite conservative in that. We have actually done that in council over the last nine, coming to the fourth triennium. But we have done it in the past where people have had a lot of experience in those areas, and that's why I would... Eugene, in infrastructure, because he'd done that before. Councillor Janet Gibb, because she's also a commissioner and she'd done through her whole district plan. She'd been a commissioner. And so then, obviously, to a strategy, or performance and strategy, she'd already done a lot of that work anyway and come into that. The policy and regulatory, again, the deputy mayor, as well as one of the other councillors, is also, you know, doing better decision making, which is the commissioner training this year.
Yep.
So again, a lot of governance, a lot of business background, and also she's got a legal background as well as a mediation background. Okay.
Yep.
So again, that policy and regulatory as well, bringing that in, but also trying to bring in some new people so that we can actually support people learning more about the jobs. And then the sustainability and your well-beings, of course, you know, for me, that's, I guess, it's my passion and baby in terms of, like, you know, and I guess what my mandate was in local government said, hey, take your mandate, the people have voted for you for a reason. and that's around the people, and the people are really important, and then working backwards and then segueing that into the other more traditional committees in the work that we do. And so obviously Lisa Thompson was an obvious example of her ability to, with people and, you know, the work that was done around Raglan as a chair. And then because we're a real rural area, then bringing that real strong rural influence in, because whether it's sustainability, whether it's climate change or whatever, our rural, whether we just live rurally or we've got a business rurally, even our towns are rural towns for servicing, again, our area. We're not large urban cities.
Yes.
Then it's important to have a balanced understanding of those dynamics. So a lot of them is around their capabilities and what they've already, their previous experience. Yep. We're really fortunate, even though we've got 9 new councillors, that the depth of past experience and what they're bringing to the table already is amazing, and we're really lucky. And it's exciting to hear that. We just heard another person, that's Councillor Candy Nataki from in the north. She does Tuaka and Pokono. She's also chair of the Huakino Trust, which is 33. Marais is one of her hats, but she's also a commissioner. So, you know, there's a lot of, like, really depth in terms of our audit and risk committees, or just, you know, just whole governance. Councillor Paniora, from who's one of our Māori ward councillors.
Yeah.
She, again, really deep governance models in terms of Maniora Matatahi Pōtahi. So, again, really deep governance backgrounds. And so when you've got governance backgrounds and understand the difference between getting too muddy into the operational as opposed to sticking to the governance of strategic and planning and forward innovation, and actually being able to ask the right questions at the right time and to understand, you know, reports coming to us and how to manage that. We're really lucky in those new 9 councillors.
Yeah, so a question, like, you've just listed a few of the councillors. It is a really different council. I think we've the first time we've had a woman who's mayor and deputy mayor, and more women than men this time. And there's kind of been a lot of change around the country as well. Feels like there's a mood for change. Do you think you guys have a mandate for doing things differently now? Especially as we've had a continuous mayor for, I think, 4 terms. Like, is it time for change?
Well, I guess we're a little bit different. You know, who knows exactly what's in each person's mind as they vote? I think. We were always going to have change here in terms of, you know, Mayor Allen was retired after doing many, many years of work on behalf and service to the Waikato District. So we were always going to have change, whichever of the 4 candidates succeeded in the mayoral one. So we were always going to have that change. 2 of them women, 2 of them men. So from that point of view, it's not like we were voted for change in terms of the leadership direction as such. It was foisted on the people that way.
Yeah.
We've got 9 women. I think, you know, it wasn't that many triennials ago when we had 1 woman.
Yeah.
But it wasn't actually until someone actually counted them up and told me, I think it was some media person. My person didn't realise myself, because if it had been 9 men and 5 women, it wouldn't have even made a point. Or if it had been a male mayor and a male deputy, again, it wouldn't have even been noted.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I guess, I always think, what's the best person for the job at the right time?
Yeah.
And have they got the capabilities and to do it? Yeah, that's where my brain has always been. But I recognise too that it's important for women who, I guess, striven for a long time, you know, the last 200 years for the vote and equality and being seen as equals, then that's important. But in terms of our capabilities, a lot of us are on that same plane of, we just want to get the best person for the job and their capability, and working together as a team to succeed on behalf of all of our residents and ratepayers. And I guess I'd like to segue that and say, and ask, some of the words that we wanted to try to use, and you're talking about innovation or new things or change. Yeah, I think that we keep doing the same things in local governments. This is just as a general, or even in government. If we keep doing the same things and then we keep getting the same results and then we're surprised about it, that's because that's kind of the definition of a mental disorder, right?
That's what they say, yes.
You know, even in our human lives, if something doesn't work well, we try something new. And sometimes we have to look at trying new, not setting ourselves up for failure, but setting ourselves up to make sure that we try new things and innovate and continually improve our innovation over time. And I think that's one of the things that, particularly around our sustainability and well-being, we're doing in this council now, is to give ear to new ways of doing things and innovations and being open to those opportunities and encouraging people to have with their ideas to bring them forward in a way that we can manage through a system and a filter system rather than jumping all over the place because we've got work to do, we've got a work program, we've got budgets in place, but also bringing in things and innovate as we go along.
Yeah. So what about when you're on the campaign trail and you're talking to people over the previous few weeks, what were the issues that seemed to dominate the discussion as you're out there amongst the district?
Sure. The things that mainly dominated were around things that really we have not much control in, a lot of it was past, because we've all had a really long... I'll be interested in how people feel after Christmas, when we've all had a bit of a rest. It's been a tough few years with the COVID. So most of the questions were really things that we, in terms of local government, and I think this is across all of the mayoral candidates and even the councils that we discussed, that we got quite friendly, all of us, on our campaigns, is there were things around the Three Waters and around the pandemic and things like concerns around co-governance or the model of what people see co-governance or partnership in New Zealand about.
Right, okay, so that you heard a lot of that. I know in here, obviously I only went to meet the candidate here, there was a lot of talk about the housing crisis here. Maybe Raglan's more affected. We're in the situation like we're kind of following the path of Queenstown where we're running out of places to put the people who actually do the work, like pour the coffees that the tourists enjoy and things like that. So
absolutely.
Yeah, that's a bit of a thing for us.
Yeah, and also in the Te Ao Māori view, I know in some of the the basics of life, we all want the same things. We want we'd like to feel like of value and respected. We'd like to have a safe place to live. We'd like to have a job and feel like we're contributing to our families and society. Basically, we want to be loved and wanted and feel part of a bigger community. Basically, most people want the same sort of things. Sometimes they use different words, but when you're in places like Raglan or Queenstown, or even just being displaced, I know in Tūhoko particularly, and even on the borders around Hamilton, there's pockets where people cannot afford to rent. They may not ever own their own home, but they can't even afford the rents to stay close to their own whānau or families anymore, and they're getting more displaced. So, yeah, those displacements of our people from their connections is an important part that council needs to be more aware of in terms of the well-being of the people that we represent. And also, when we talk about people, they're our customers. All of our resident ratepayers are our customers, I believe, but also our customers are also our shareholders in the council, because shareholders have a participatory value as well, because if we need to hear those voices and we need to be working together as partners. So shareholders means that you've got some skin in the game as well, because it's not just one person or one organisation doing something to others. It's us doing it together and rowing that waka.
So are there concrete things that council can do about housing?
Well, that's, there is that Waikato Regional Housing Initiative.
Yeah.
And actually, I had a minister... I'm trying to run around so my voice sounds a bit croaky. It's because my throat's a bit sore from talking so much, basically for 10 hours a day for the last whatever month.
Yeah.
But we had one of those meetings. I want to get some of those meetings under the belt so that we can move on and with some of those work programs, which are not necessarily work programs of council, but work programs of us as councillors and me as a mayor. But one of the things that came up was a bit touched on with Minister Nanaima Hutu when she came to visit, which is a really lovely, long, empowering visit. And we touched on housing's done by government, by a lot of different ministries. And, how is that collectively in sync in terms of the government's definitions and how they're working? How can we as council support any housing initiatives? And also when we've got really good models that actually are working in our region, like the Waikato Regional Housing Initiative, how can government then support those initiatives to go further and faster?
Okay.
So anytime, because wellbeing, the people, I guess that's my mandate is, I said the people, it's a he tangata, he tangata, he tangata. Whoever you put the words, it's the same words. It's about the people, and it's about the people being with us, and hopefully we bring everyone, as many people as we can, along on the journey together, so we can do good governance and good decision-making together. It doesn't mean we all get what we want. We're not all Santa Claus, but we understand what we can do and what we can't do, or what we have to put off because of the priorities, but work together to achieve something like housing.
So one of the things
lobbying is really important for that sort of thing.
Yeah. One of the things I look around, I'm like, okay, so where's some land that we could do something about the housing crisis? And I know that council over the last 20 years at least has been divesting itself of land. There's, I can think of three different plots of land, at least here in Raglan, that were sold off by council. Is council at least going to stop selling off its land so that it's got the means to do something for the future?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not aware of those particular pieces or why they were done. And, you know, I'm sure at the time when they were done, there was good reasons why. What I can say is, now this is from, now my memory stretching back about a year, but from memory, there was about 1,800 pieces of property that we strategically own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the strategic property department that has under their mandate. And the previous council asked for a report to council about, I guess, the if you're talking the traffic system, like green, orange, and red, what have we got that we should hold on to? What have we got that we don't need forever? Because it's, you know, maybe in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of a country, in the middle of a farm that we can't even have access to or whatever.
Yeah.
And what is it we're not sure of that we need to get some guidance? So that piece of work around that strategic property, which one is a huge amount of money and assets, and also then identifying as well, if we had our magic wands out, what pieces of strategic land should we be looking at when we're looking at our growth strategy of 2070 and further ahead? Because in Te Ao Māori view, when they're looking 500 years ahead, what does our Waikato district look like in 30 years, 50 years, 100 years, 500 years? What strategic pieces of property would we envision that we need for the people? So that strategic piece of work is really important, rather than piecemeal ad hoc selling off things. That would be a better way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that piece, again, is one of those work programs that's with the strategic property to bring back to this new council. And it's a good time for that, because it's very difficult for an old council to, you know, in some ways it's maybe easier if there's only one or two new councillors, but when you've got the majority of councillors who are new, then it's right that that piece of work comes back to, it's about the new visions, it's about directions, it's about how they see the future, and then make some decisions based on that. Just like we stand on the shoulders of previous councils and make the best decisions we can at the time, then again for the future, other councils will stand on our shoulders and we'll make the best decisions. But that's a strategic way of managing the property in that. But in case, and each time we make those decisions, things like now that wellbeing was taken out of the Local Government Act and then they're put back in. And now we've got more of a mandate, it seems to be, towards councils defining our own definition of what we think of well-beings and how far we expand that those well-beings.
Right.
Okay, so we're in the past, we're actually just, no, your job is just to do roads, libraries, parks, you know, that fundamental, and waters, you know, that fundamental. Now it seems to be an evolutionary process. Now that may change again in the future. All we can do is, within the framework that we're working, do the best decision-making in a strategic way with our communities brought along. Is that we can.
Okay. Jackie, can I ask a couple more questions quickly before we go? We did talk, and I talked with all the mayoral candidates about this, about delegating powers to community boards. We're thinking of our own one here in Raglan, of course. But there was a lot of discussion of that. Everyone seemed to agree that was a good idea. Is that going to be happening?
Sure. And it actually came up yesterday. It was, I think it was the bottom of one of the pages. The empowerment is definitely one of those work streams that we want to look at. Actually looking at now a community board, you know, an analysis of capability. My original thought that we're discussing at the moment in terms of if we're going to have capability and capacity with our community boards, what does that look like? So I like to think, you know, what does that mean? So it's best to actually have a measurable result. So some community boards have more capacity or capability or more aspiration to do that than others. So what's the baseline of governance and capability now? And how we would see that in 3 years and 5 years in the future. So part of that's the analysis of where we're at. Community boards, what's their feedback on a case-by-case basis?
Mm.
And then overall, I think, you know, at the moment it's still fluid, but the intention is that we empower them to do it. Now, what does empowerment mean to each different person within the community board? And what does it mean to a community board as a whole? That can be a whole raft of things from, hey, I want to be trained so I'm a better governor. Or, no, I want to have a budget where I want to make, you know, all the decisions for my town, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's the things that we'll start to tease out. So it's definitely on the radar. It's definitely part of the thing that we want to progress.
Okay, great.
It also flags as one of the things that, you know, we actually really poorly pay. It's not about money, but local government is pretty, really poorly paid for our job. And so if and when it'll come down to, well, do community boards feel they want to do better governance and then be more empowered with training and decision-making, or they want to be involved more with how to do things, and do they want more pay? So if they want more pay, then we'd have to take that off the councillors.
Yeah.
Oh, we only get one pool of money, for example. There's only one pool of money, right?
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, do they want to be paid more? or they feel like they need to be paid more because they're doing maybe something else rather than empowerment, say in training and development and governance, then there will be a conversation about how does that work and we pay that.
Okay.
But just the short answer is yes, it's important. Empowerment of our governments and all of our communities around how we better make decisions and how we plan for our future and how we do things and how we make sure we're engaging with all the right people and spreading that, the better it is for everybody.
Okay.
And so that's definitely one of those pages.
All right, one other thing I wanted to ask about, and you probably might not have been expecting this, but there's a lot of talk in Raglan about how do things get planned, and people are asking me questions. I'm like, well, oftentimes a town has a structure plan, and that's how you plan for the future. At the moment, it's individual developers doing things is basically how Raglan is growing. And I know that even our former community board chair, Bob McLeod, was always wanting a structure plan, and it doesn't seem that it's been possible to get one out of council or out of council staff or the planning department. Can we look at a structure plan for Raglan? Is that something we can do?
Well, yes, so it's a good question. I mean, even we think that councils actually plan where things go. What we do plan is even, I think one of the things, your Raglan actually gives a really good way of where the people and the amazing work that your group as a whole and collectively as a town has done is amazing and a great acknowledgement of that work, Mahi and the people involved.
Mm, mm.
But what happens is one of the things we'll be looking at the growth 2070 in terms of where we're flagging growth.
Yeah.
It doesn't exactly by exact person's property, but it gives colours over quite particular areas of each of the towns. And that's a really good place to look at it. But what happens then is because we're flagging for growth towards 2070, which is coming up pretty fast, that means that those are areas that council thinks is where we should be doing it from a whole of infrastructure point of view and capability. But then it's up to developers who, it's their businesses, and they've got to put their backsides on the ground and their money in their hands to develop. It's quite high risk business being developers, high risk, high reward, to go, yes, I can actually put that money there, go through the costs involved and consents, and then develop a piece of property. But they might within, say, a circle of what we say is even a structure plan, they might be on the outer circle of a structure plan with their consent, or they might be on the inner circle closer to the urban area. We don't have any control as to when the consent applications come in, as to whether which piece of land they've got. So now, I don't know Raglan that well, but if I try and say, you've got that little industrial area just as you come into Raglan, right on the left?
Yeah.
Well, right.
That was developed by a guy who just decided to go and do it, and then council
exactly.
went along with it. Yeah.
Right. So what happens, let's say, even between the garage when you come into Raglan and there, if we flag that area would be an area of really good growth for Raglan, as an example. But it does depend on whoever owns, do they own the piece of land around close to where your service station is as you come into the entry, that kind of end of it, or out by then a little industrial area. So actually the development itself, once you put the structure plan in place, and the development actually comes in piecemeal depending on the developer and what piece of land that they've bought. So it's a bit like a jigsaw puzzle, unfortunately, if that makes sense. And so we don't have control on that because we don't own the land. They own the land, and then they also decide the timing of it. So sometimes they might just say, well, I'm going to do it this year, or they might hold back because of the COVID or economic decisions, or that the fuel prices have gone up, or the interest rates have gone up, blah, 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 or they've got 10 other projects on. And a really good example of this would be Lakeside Development in Te Kauwhata, which most of you regularly probably are aware of it, or even Sleepyhead at Oheniwai. Now, both of those things were not planned by council. And in Lakeside, there was actually a private plan change, so that anybody at any time can go through the RMA process, the Resource Management Act, and put a private plan change in, go through the consenting process, and what council needs to do is follow the law and the legals. They can't just say, well, we had wanted something there. As long as it goes through with all the right legal points of view, because our property laws are very strong. If people own property, they have a lot of say about how they want to use their property, which is fair, right?
Mm.
Why should government tell us what to do with their own property, for example? But there was a private plan change. We had not segued that would be a development there. Now it's a thriving, metropolis almost beside Lake Waikerie. But that was a private plan change, not planned, even if there had been a structure plan in Te Kauwhata. So structure plans don't necessarily stop people from growing in areas that weren't anticipated. And anyway, in the Sleepyhead is another example.
So does that mean a structure plan is not worth bothering with?
Well, a structure plan is good for towns because it gives a planning rules around where things should go, ideally, and from good planning points of view, sure. So Yeah, I mean, so it's not, but that doesn't mean that it'll happen in a, you know, because if one person's wanting to put another, let's say, shopping centre in the shops next to the last shop, but then they might own the piece of property that's four shops across, so there might be still a gap in the shops, if you know what I mean. The strategy plan doesn't actually control how that then is implanted. Mm. It's just another tool.
I'm not getting a very definite answer here. what's happening? Would
okay? So if you look, if you had,
a, are we going to get one or not? I guess is like people want to know.
Well, yeah. Well, then there's the best thing to do is to talk to your counsellors and then talk to your. I don't know what the work program is specifically for. If I'd known the question, I could have given the answer for you, Aaron.
Yeah, of course.
That would be helpful.
Yep.
Yep. And but it's a good question. Lots of people want structure plans. And I'm not sure what the capability is and where we're at the moment. I think we're going through one at Ngarawahia. But if they want one and they haven't got one and there's a need for it compared to other towns' needs, then that'll be sorted out in terms of, you know, that capability and the need and the desire. But what I'm saying is, if you looked on a Google map of Raglan and you said, okay, there's a structure planner where I would think go things like, and overlay what we've already done, which is the growth strategy map, where we think things should grow and how they should grow, and then opening it up for inviting developers to come and grow in those areas, they are good segues for it. But even if you get a structure plan, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get the control which parts are going to actually grow first.
Yeah, I appreciate
that. That's what I'm trying to say, because it's actually then a private process of who goes first and with which pieces of land within that structure plan. So it's not the be end of all to have a structure plan.
Okay, yeah, understand.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get it. Like, it is, I mean, it is complicated. It's enormously complicated planning your town, and we get lots of diverse opinion here, of course, so I'm just kind of picking up on some of that. But look, Jackie,
sure.
It's been great talking to you. I've got another interview guest about to come in the door.
Yes.
So congratulations on winning the election. And look forward to see what happens over the next 3 years with you as mayor and our new council.
Thank you, Aaron, and happy to chat with you any time.
Okay,
great.
Thanks.
Thank you for your time.
All right, folks, that was our new mayor, Jackie Church. And I didn't ask her about, I didn't tell her we were going to talk about structure plans, but I've had a few conversations with people saying, why are things happening? Why is this happening this way? And some people have said to me that structure plan is a way to better plan the development of your community. So we'll see, but again, it does require people on the ground forcing things to happen a little bit from time to time. Hey, Nikki Keys is about to walk in the door of the studio, and we're just gonna have a little break and back with him in a moment.